It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
This is Lighthouse Faith Podcast, moving forward in truth and love. I'm Lauren Green, Chief Religion Correspondent for Fox News Channel and author of the book Lighthouse Faith. Newly elected President Joe Biden is the second Catholic in the history of the United States to be Commander-in-Chief. Yet the question for pundits and religious leaders is, what kind of Catholic or Christian is he? Recently, the Archbishop of Kansas City said that Biden should stop defining himself as a devout Catholic because he's advancing an agenda that opposes church teachings, particularly on the issue of abortion. Yet it was Biden's outward appearance of faith, photos of him praying, carrying a rosary, that attracted many Christians to him and spurred many of them to vote for him, even evangelicals, which were Donald Trump's stronghold. But now that Biden is in office, there are rumblings among the faith leaders that the Democrats, once proud to be the party of no faith, are trying to recast Christianity in the image of its platform and hijack traditional biblical faith. Here to explain more is Dr. Frank Turk. He's the president of crossexamined.org and is the co-author of the book, I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. Welcome, Dr. Turk. How you doing?
Lauren, it's always great being with you. Hope you're well.
I'm doing okay. This is interesting. Your last op-ed takes a giant swipe really at the progressive left agenda. It's called Progressive Ideology and the Hijacking of the Christian Faith. What do you say is going on here?
I think what's going on here, Lauren, is, well, let's just go back to when Amy Coney Barrett was going through the confirmation process. This was actually before she even became a Supreme Court justice. Do you remember Senator Dianne Feinstein from California had her, was sort of grilling her, and since Amy Coney Barrett is a conservative Catholic that believes in the teachings of the Catholic mm-hmm. Church, it was Senator Feinstein who said, the dogma lives loud in you. Yet when Joe Biden becomes president, suddenly he's a devout Catholic, and that's okay. We ought to support that because Biden doesn't really agree with the Catholic Church, certainly not politically when it comes to, say, the issue of abortion. And Lauren, I think one of the reasons they're doing this is they know in 2022, normally the party in power really has a bad time. The only way they're going to have a chance of maintaining power is if they convince Christians that the Democrats really are Christians and they're doing Christian things when, in fact, they're really not.
Very interesting. The flashpoint for a lot of is the Capitol Hill storming January 6th. And it painted Christians as the culprits in this. And I thought it was interesting because no one painted the Black Lives Matter people with their religion when all these protests went on over the last summer. Nobody was saying, mm-hmm. What religion were they? No one's talking about that. But
right.
What happened with that whole Christians are to blame in the Capitol storming?
Well, because anyone associated with Trump and the media thinks that evangelical Christianity is a political party. That's all they cover when it comes to religion, present company excluded. You're one of the few people that understands it. But the media in general thinks that the church, particularly conservative Christians, are just a political party because they only cover how they vote or when there's some scandal in the church. Those are the only two things that are covered by the major media when it comes to Christianity. And so they say, well, evangelical Christians are just Trump supporters, so they must be responsible for the storming of the Capitol. Now, keep in mind, Lauren, I don't know what the exact number was. There was probably 500,000 people on the mall on January 6th. And how many broke into the Capitol? Was it 100 maybe? And now we're going to tar the 500,000 because of the behavior of 100? I don't think that's fair.
Yeah. Can you tell me, though, specifically, what are the things that the Democrats are doing in terms of sort of recasting Christianity in its image? Because it seems as though they do seem to you know, want to embrace faith right now. I mean, Mayor de Blasio of New York, you know, who is not a person of faith at all, just appointed a community person for the administration, which he'd never done before, that to my knowledge. What's with the Democrats and faith now?
Well, again, I think they're trying to make sure they get some Christian vote in 2022. And what they're going to do, Lauren, is use words that we all are for, words like choice and equality, and actually define them in a different way. For example, the phrase freedom to choose. We're all for freedom to choose, but you just got to ask them to complete the sentence, right? Freedom to choose what? The death of a baby? Do we really have the choice to do that? And why do they want the woman to have the right to choose to kill her baby, but not the right to choose where she schools that baby if she allows it to live, right? They're not for school choice. Why don't mothers have the freedom to choose where they, you know, where they school their children? Also, the word equality is a big word, but it doesn't mean what we normally think it means. We think equality is equality of opportunity, which we're all for, but they want it now to be equality of outcome. That's what the equity, the new word is equity, as you know, Lauren. Equity means that everybody's going to wind up in the same place. And if they don't, the government's going to force that result by taking from the haves and giving to the have-nots. And that, of course, is dangerous. There is no society in the history of the world that has ever had equality of outcome, because there are so many factors that go into why people arrive where they are in life. And much of it has to do with personal behavior that the government can't dictate.
Well, you talk about equality, and the House just passed the Equality Act, and I try to tell people what this is about and try to do stories on it, and I think people's eyes just kind of glaze over because they don't understand the ramifications of it, and they also don't really get why there's such conflict, because it does sound rather benign when you say Equality Act. Well, everybody should be
exactly
for that, but there's some hidden dangers in the Equality Act. What are they?
Oh, there are many hidden dangers in the so-called Equality Act. It's really the Inequality Act. Just take women's sports. It's going to mean that men who identify as women have to be able to participate in women's sports. It means that men who identify as women can go into a woman's locker room and disrobe. It means men identifying as women can actually strip search if they're working for TSA. They can strip search a woman or pat down a woman, because according to the left, in the Equality Act, if a man thinks he's a woman despite his biology. Also, it's going to have problems, quite obviously, with freedom of religion. Anybody who's a Christian, a Muslim, a Jew, who actually believes in science and believes that there are men and women, they're going to be treated as racist. You see, because this is added to the 1964 Civil Rights Act, that if you don't agree with this ideology, you're no better than a racist. Also, let me mention one other thing, Lauren, and I don't have time to get into my personal story on this. We can explore it if you want. But 10 years ago, I was basically canceled for being against same-sex marriage. And this Equality Act will actually make 97% of the population unequal. And here's what I mean by that. Let's suppose that you're working in a major corporation and they have to downsize for whatever reason. Say if they have to downsize, they have to get rid of one person, and they decide to do that. And there's a person who identifies as LGBTQ, and then there's John or Jane Doe that doesn't identify as LGBTQ. Who are they going to get rid of? I think they're going to get rid of John or Jane Doe, because John or Jane Doe can't bring an expensive discrimination lawsuit because they don't have the protections that the LGBTQ people have. So now 3% of the population has an advantage over 97% of the population, and that is anything but equality. It's inequality.
But isn't that just sort of raising a what if, you know, a problem that really hasn't arisen yet? I mean, taking that this is, you know, the sort of fear mongering, you know, this is what's going to happen, you know, the center cannot hold, you know, anarchy is forced upon us, that kind of thing. You know, isn't that just a little extreme?
No, it's already happening. Even without this Equality Act. I mean, I was fired from Cisco and Bank of America back in 2011, this is 10 years ago, this is 4 years before the Supreme Court imposed same-sex marriage on the land, I wrote a book called Correct, Not Politically Correct, How Same-Sex Marriage Hurts Everyone. Never brought it up at work. It was just my own personal work. But when they discovered I had written that, they canceled me immediately. And this is without any law. Now you're going to be legally at a disadvantage. And let me ask you this, Lauren, do you think in corporate America today that LGBTQ people are being discriminated against negatively? I think it's the opposite, right? I think, okay. I guess an acid test for this would be, where do you think you're going to have more trouble in corporate America? If you agree with same-sex marriage or you disagree with it? I think
so. You're basically saying that your vote, this Equality Act is almost making it illegal to have certain thoughts. Then
it is. That's part of the problem. It's going to make people who actually agree with Jesus be considered no better than a racist, because Jesus thought marriage was between a man and a woman in Matthew 19. Are we going to say that Jesus is no better than a racist? Because basically that's what this Equality Act is saying. It's a solution looking for a problem. There is no problem. LGBTQ people are doing quite well. In fact, they make more than heterosexuals in the workplace. They are sought after by corporate America.
Yeah, but you could say, though, that those advances were made because of their hard-fought, battles against, the prejudices that are out there. I mean, you could make that case too right now.
Sure, you could make the case that in the past they were discriminated against, but the tables have turned now. The people who are being discriminated mm-hmm. against are those with natural law values or natural law beliefs or traditional religious beliefs. Mm-hmm. They are the people that are now being ostracized. And look, when I was fired for this, I said, look, I work with anybody of any sexual orientation. I treat everybody with respect because they're all made in the image of God. If we have political disagreements, that's fine. They can disagree with me. I'm totally open and willing to work with anybody. It's the other side, mm-hmm. the other side who says they're fighting for inclusion, tolerance, and diversity that will exclude you the moment you have a diverse view.
So I want to move on, though, to the Hyde Amendment, because that actually is the thing that the Equality Act doesn't quite explicitly make clear. That the Equality Act, doesn't it do away with the Hyde Amendment, which is basically saying you can't use government funds to fund abortion, right?
I'm not sure if that's embedded in that act. I wouldn't be surprised if it is. I haven't read the whole act myself.
Okay, I could be wrong. But that's one of the stories I read.
If that's in there, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I mean that's one of the issues. I mean, I've heard that it basically gets rid of RFRA, which is the Religious Freedom Restoration Act.
Oh, it does. Oh, yes, it does. But that's not the Hyde Amendment. The Hyde Amendment was from 1980. The RFRA Act, I want to say, was 1993, which basically, look. In reality, we all know that if the Equality Act passed, if a fair Supreme Court got it, it would be struck down as unconstitutional. But I don't know if we have a fair Supreme Court. I don't put any confidence in the court anymore. In fact, Neil Gorsuch had one of the most terrible decisions in a long time, where he basically changed the definition of sex in the Bostock, I think it was, case a couple of years ago. He changed the definition of sex unilaterally, the definition of sex that was found in the 1964 Civil Rights Amendment or Civil Rights Act. He unilaterally changed it. So who knows what the court will do. But it's obviously a violation of the First Amendment to the United States Constitution.
Well, I want to take a break right now here on the Lighthouse Faith Podcast. We'll be right back talking with Dr. Frank Turek, talking about what equality actually means for Christianity. We'll be right back.
Kudlow on Fox Business is now on the go for podcast fans. Get key interviews with the biggest business newsmakers of the day. The Kudlow Podcast will be available on the go after the show every weekday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
Okay, we're back with Dr. Frank Turek. He is the president of crossexamine.org. And one of the things that you talk about, the sort of trifecta of progressive philosophy. You say it's inclusion, tolerance, and diversity. all really sounding good things, but what's wrong with that?
Well, they don't really mean inclusion, tolerance, and diversity. Look, let's just take tolerance for a second. Tolerance is supposed to mean that you put up with views you disagree with, you know, and that you respect people who hold those views. Now it means if you don't agree with us, in fact, if you don't celebrate what we believe and do, we are going to exclude you. So they've changed the word. And by the way, as Christians, we're not commanded to be tolerant. Tolerance is too weak. Tolerance says hold your nose and put up with them. We're supposed to love, and love says reach out to people. So we know this, by the way, as parents too. If you tolerate everything your kid wants to do, you're not loving. You have to stand in the way of evil that's going to hurt them and others. So tolerance is too weak. We're supposed to love people. And that means, as Paul says in 1 Corinthians 13, he says, love always protects. Love rejoices in the truth. How do we love people? We stand in the way of things that are going to harm them and others. So love does not mean approval. It means to protect. It means to rejoice in the truth. So we're not to be tolerant. We're to go beyond that, to be loving. And that requires some difficulty sometimes. In fact, I think it was Thomas Sowell who said this, Lauren. You know, Thomas Sowell says everything well. He said, if you tell people what they want to hear, you're helping yourself. If you tell people what they need to hear, you're helping them.
That's a very interesting concept. And it's actually true. I mean, but nobody really wants to hear things that disagrees with them. No. You know, I was just thinking, listening to you and watching you and saying this, like, but you are the grade A toxic masculinity figure. You understand that, right?
Yeah, that's right. According to them, I'm an oppressor, right? Not because of what I do, but because I'm white, heterosexual, Christian, male. I'm not impoverished. So I check all the boxes of being somebody who's an oppressor according to critical theory.
Yeah, you're at the top of the food chain. I mean, and according to critical theory, no one has to listen to you. So how do you respond to that?
I respond to that by saying the same words Martin Luther King said. He said, I have a dream that one day my children are going to be judged based on the content of their character, not the color of their skin. And critical theory flips Martin Luther King and the Bible on their heads, because now we're judging people based on their race. And we're saying, oh, because of your race, you shouldn't be heard. King would turn over in his grave if he heard that. That's racism. But that's where critical theory is now.
But that's what's being taught in the schools, critical race theory or critical theory. And it's a phrase that actually probably first got a big airing at the debate. And with, you know, Fox commentator Chris Wallace, he asked President Trump at that point, you know, you outlawed, you know, the critical theory in the federal government. And I can't remember what his answer was, but I mean, it's now getting a lot of airplay. On the surface, it seems like a really great thing. How do you push back against that if you don't believe in critical theory?
Well, first of all, I think critical theory does get some things right. There are oppressors and there are oppressed, and that is evil. I mean, that's true. The diagnosis in some cases might be right. The problem is the cure is worse than the disease, because if you're going to treat people based upon characteristics over which they have no control and you're going to ostracize them, that's exactly what you're trying to fight, right? You're trying to fight oppression, but now you're saying people with certain characteristics need to be oppressed. So what happens is the people who say they're fighting against oppression become the oppressors themselves. And I think President Trump was right to get rid of critical theory, because although it diagnoses problems correctly, the solution or the cure is worse than the disease. You don't fight racism with more racism. As I think it was... Who said that? Was it Clarence Thomas or was it, might have been Morgan Freeman? I can't remember, but they were right. You don't fight racism with more racism.
Well, what is the solution though? Because a lot of white churches, white Christian churches are kind of doing a mea culpa these days. And we're so bad. We're, you know, we've got to repair relationships with the Black community. You know, it's like the apology tour of the white Christians. in some cases. What's really the issue here, and what's the solution? Because there are the most segregated place in America really still is on Sundays, even though a lot, there are many mega churches that have are multicultural. Still, there is still the black church, and they don't call it a white church, but everybody understands it's a white church. Right. What's the solution? I mean, is it integrating
one of the reasons
churches?
There's a black church. One of the reasons there's a black church is because the white church was so racist in the past. That's true. There's no question about it, you know, and we shouldn't shy away from that. The question is, where do we go now? And the solution, as is always the solution, as you well know, Lauren, is the gospel, because there is not Jew or Gentile. There is not male or female. There is not servant or free. Everybody is one in Christ, according to the gospel. According to Paul in Galatians 3:28, he says the same thing in the book of Colossians. We're all one in Christ, and heaven will be a multi-ethnic place. We know that. And so when we worship, we ought to, if at all possible, worship together. Now, can you force this? No, you can't force people to go to a certain church. You have to be inviting to all people, but people are going to go where they want to go. But certainly racism in the church is something that obviously is wrong. And I don't see how anyone in 2021 thinks that racism is a good thing. In fact, I know there was a gentleman by the name of Jones who wrote a book about, the book is called White Too Long. It has to do with racism in the white church over the years. But he had a very telling quote in it. And the very telling quote, which I think kind of blew his theory out of the room, was the fact that he said, it's very difficult. I'm paraphrasing. I don't have it in front of me. He said, Lauren, it's very difficult to discover racist attitudes anywhere now in a survey. Why? Because if you ask people directly, do you believe in white supremacy or black supremacy or any kind of supremacy, they're going to unequivocally say, no, of course not. Now, if you asked that same question 70 years ago, people would directly say, oh, yeah, yeah, I believe in white supremacy or black power, or whatever. They would say that, right? They won't say it now. Why? Because we've made such progress. It's unfashionable and immoral, not just unfashionable, but immoral to be a racist. And so here's this guy Jones trying to show that racism still exists in the church, and it does to a certain extent. I'm sure it exists everywhere, but nowhere near to the level it was 60 or 70 years ago. And so what he tries to do is he tries to have this, he tries to conduct a survey, Lauren, where he has what he calls slippery questions, where he tries to get people to admit without knowing it that they're racist. And it just doesn't work. It doesn't, it's too slippery to really discover if somebody is racist. And the very fact that people don't want to admit it directly is a demonstration of the progress we've made, even though we still have a little bit further to go.
A little bit. I think we have a lot further to go. I don't think people are really understanding what racism really is. I think everybody comes to the table with a certain prejudices about certain people. You know, short people come to the table with prejudices about tall people, and tall people come to the table with the prejudices about short people or fat people or thin people. Or, I mean, any kind of characteristic. I mean, I'm probably going the intersectionality kind of phrase about this too. It's like in all of these prejudices, all these things that we are that we can't really correct, we can't do anything about it. I wouldn't mean to be correct, but I mean, we can't change certain things about us. And then that becomes a flashpoint then for, you know, my being offended or even things that, you know.
Yeah, no, I think what you're pointing out is otherism, right? It's not just race that we separate with people over. As you mentioned, we separate with people over height, over age, over religion, over philosophy, certainly over politics. I mean, we other people over just about anything. My point when I said a little bit further is I ask people who talk about systematic racism, and I always ask them the question, from a legal perspective, what needs to change? What laws need to change? And nobody can ever give me an answer, Lauren, because I think our laws generally have improved to such a degree that we're against racism now. I mean, the 1964 Civil Rights Act was a landmark decision, building upon obviously previous Supreme Court, or I should say constitutional amendments back in the 1800s. So I don't think that laws need to change. I think attitudes still can get better. But when I ask people, if you're a benevolent dictator and you could just change certain laws to fix systematic racism, what would you do? Nobody can give me an answer. Maybe I'm missing something. Well, actually, I can.
That's very interesting.
I have some suggestions, if you'll permit me to give them.
Okay, go ahead.
Number one, we need to protect life, because despite the fact that blacks make up only 13% of the population, they make up 38% of the abortions. The most racist thing we do in America is abortion. Number two, I think we need to have school choice, because if we're going to have public education, and we should ensure that a minority has the same ability to get the same kind of education as somebody who is more well off in a better neighborhood. And look, why does the left want us to have the freedom to choose to kill our children, but not the freedom to choose where we educate them? Number three, I think we have to have welfare to work. Bill Clinton and Newt Gingrich got together and improved that. And Barack Obama reversed it. And now we are still enslaving people. And also, this creates problems for the kids, because now kids are born out of wedlock. Welfare without work actually brings more illegitimacy, and that affects kids negatively. And then the fourth thing I think we could do is we could have, and President Trump started this, was housing incentive zones. We have one right here in Charlotte where we're building lower income housing to give people a leg up, and the builders are getting tax incentives. So those are four things I think we could do and should do to give more opportunities to minorities. But the political party that wants to do those things are not the Democrats.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Dr. Turek, I should call him Frank. I don't know if I call you Frank or Dr. Turek.
No, but, call me Frank. I'm not the kind of doctor that can help you. So just call me Frank, please.
Well, I want to thank you for being on Lighthouse Faith Podcast. I know you'll probably get a lot of blowback because of the, you know, some of the more controversial things we talked about. But I wanted to get to, I don't want to get with you about Joe Biden's and his Catholicism, because you're not Catholic. I'd rather have a Catholic kind of address that issue of what the Kansas City Archbishop talked about. But I think that'll be a conversation that many people start having in the next few months, at least. But anyway, I want to thank you so much for being on Lighthouse Faith Podcast. And where can people find out more about your thoughts and ideas?
Yeah, they're all at crossexamine.org if they don't cancel that website there. In the name of inclusion, tolerance, and diversity, Lauren. Crossexamine.org. Crossexamine with a D on the end of it. And then we have a YouTube channel, Crossexamine, same thing. We have a TV show, radio program. I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist podcast. If they look for that, they'll find a podcast we do every week.
Yeah. Well, it's a good book, too, by the way. I love that book. Some really great, good points in there.
Thank you so much.
There is no thing as truth. Is that true? I always remember that from that.
That's right. That's where we start, with truth. Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. I want to thank you so much for being on the podcast. And I want to thank everyone for listening to Lighthouse Faith Podcast. This is Lauren Green. Have a blessed day.
Jason in the House, the Jason Chaffetz Podcast. Dive deeper than the headlines and the party lines as I take on American life, politics, and entertainment. Subscribe now on foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.